It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by the Honorable Mike Conaway. Represents the 11th Congressional District of Texas, chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and is also on the House Intelligence Committee doing some work there. Great to see you.
Well, Tony, thanks for having me on today. I appreciate being able to talk to your listeners.
Let's start first on the ag side. Budget, fiscal year 2018 budget proposal from the administration is here. What do you see?
Well, let me real quickly on June the 14th, we had a shooting event at baseball practice. And so first I would ask all your listeners to pray for the wounded, pray for their families, and pray for all the families of the folks who are involved, because they obviously need healing. But pray for our nation. If, in fact, our divisiveness on the political side, the anger, the hatefulness, the vitriol that we've been experiencing over the last several years contributed to this demented individual doing what he did, then let's take stock of that and begin to be better than that. Let's have competing ideas, compete them hard, but let's use language that isn't insulting to the other party, language that doesn't inflame anger, but yet just, you know, try to be as convincing as you can, but just be more responsible for how we say things and compete the ideas as opposed to competing the nastiness or vitriol or volume or those kind of things. But now, back on the paid political announcement just then, back on the budget, Diane Black, the Budget Committee Chair, has one of the hardest jobs on campus, and that is trying to put together a budget. She's going around to the various authorizing committees, asking them where, how much money they can cut out of the budgets and those kind of things. The story that I've got to tell is a good one, I think. If you look at the January 2017 baseline, we will spend about CBO estimates, we'll spend about $104 billion less than was projected to have been spent under the 14 Farm Bill. I've asked the Budget Committee to leave us at that number, which would be $92 million out of food stamps over the 10 years, as well as $12 billion out of everything else over that 10-year frame. So that's a big number to try to come up with already. And so I've asked them not to add to my difficulty by insisting on something beyond that. Those decisions are being made right now. And so I've got, you know, production agriculture, the farm bill, we've got a great story to tell. I've been telling it every chance I get to whatever group. I spoke yesterday at RSC about the need to take the path that I'm trying to lay out with respect to food stamp reforms and other things that would be counter to some of the things that the budget may ask us to do. So to be determined, but we're in a critical stage right now, and I'm trying to make sure that the decision makers are fully aware of the impact it will have depending on what they decide to do. So stay tuned on that. We'll know in hopefully the next couple weeks or so kind of what that's going to be. But then once that happens, we'll start the timeline. Right now, I plan to have the bill on the floor, the House version on the floor, late fourth quarter, early first quarter of next year. And then that'll allow the Senate to get done whatever they're going to do. We go to conference. We can get this thing hammered out and ready to go before October 1st of 18. There will be, even if we had the budget line that is currently in place, the 104 less, there will be startlingly difficult decisions to be made, hard choices. They will not get any easier by putting them off. And so what I'm going to try to do is force the issue in August and September, whenever that time frame is, to go ahead and make them. They won't get easier in October. They won't be less clear in October. We'll know what we need to do or what we have to choose between doing before this thing expires. So getting that kind of certainty back into the market so that at least on the crop insurance side, production, the income protection side, the rural development, conservation, those titles, people will know for the next 5 years what's going to happen before we get into the start of the new fiscal year. And that certainty is worth a lot in and of itself. And we're going to try to deliver on that as well.
Do you mind if I ask you about another situation? I know that it may be a hot button here, but obviously you've mentioned that there are a couple of other commodities that have to find their way back into the farm bill. And is there any movement on that?
Well, you're obviously talking about cotton. which is outside Title I. I have to get it back under Title I somehow, some way. There are two crop years between now and when that happens, and so our cotton guys need help now. And they don't have it. And so we're still working with the Secretary trying to find a way to find something that will get them some assistance. But writing the Farm Bill, we'll get cotton back under Title I in some form or fashion, probably oil seed. I don't know if we could do lint, given the speculative nature of what Brazil might or might not say if we put lint back under. And so getting the cottonseed oil in is something we will strive to do, or cotton in general. Let me leave it at that. Cotton in general, back under Title I in some form or fashion. On the dairy side, it's already still in Title I. It's just fine-tuning the milk margin protection plan, and we have a lot of proposals out there. The one that Debbie Staben now presented as part of the omnibus was always a non-starter. She knew that from the beginning, that it would fail. In fact, she confessed to saying, when she pits commodities against each other, she wins, and the commodities lose. And that's been her modus operandi. She roped in Pat Leahy into helping her with that, and they stabbed cotton producers all across this country in the back on purpose to get her way, to maintain her leverage that she thinks she has going into the next Farm Bill, which means 2 years of pain in cotton country because of the ego and the mean-spiritedness of Debbie Stabenow. And you know, she is what she is. She's done this over and over and over, from what I've told. This is just the first time she's done it to me. And so, we'll be hopefully better prepared the next time this happens to try to counter her technique of doing what she did to cotton. And because the linking cotton and milk together was never an issue. Cotton was not looking for milk money, and milk wasn't looking for cotton money. Colin Peterson had a plan that would fix milk, and even his plan was going to be hard sledding because it required about $150 billion, some level of new dollars, nowhere near the $800 million that she was and she and Leahy threw on the table at the last minute with no pray for. I mean, there's just, Tony, I can't tell you how mad I get every time I start talking about this and what she did to good people in this country because she didn't represent any of them. You know, the House Agriculture Committee, we take the attitude that we, while we represent certain aspects, we represent all of production agriculture, everybody, not just the stuff that's grown in our district. And she only produces, apparently she only is worried about the stuff that she grows or produces in Michigan and Vermont. And shame on them for having done that. So that said, we're going to get the milk thing fixed as well. One of the new programs of the 14 Farm Bill was the Agriculture Revenue Coverage Program. It's giving some weird results in the field as a result of yield differentials between counties. We'll have to address that in some form or fashion to make sure that as best we can that doesn't happen as well. So a lot of tough stuff, no new money in all likelihood. And then I haven't even talked to you about the SNAP program and what we're going to try to get done there. So we got a heavy lift to get this thing done, but I'm excited about it. I've got a great team in place, terrific subcommittee chairs, good members on both sides of the aisle that are engaged on various aspects of the package, and everybody's excited about getting started and moving forward on this thing.
Obviously, we rely on exports. There's been some encouraging news from China on the beef side. But there are also challenges out there excitement on sugar side as well. What are you seeing on a couple of these angles?
Well, we're hopeful that the deal with China is detailed enough that they can't hide behind unsound science to say on the one hand, yes, your beef can come in, but then on the other hand, say it meets some standard that nobody thinks makes any sense and thereby keeping it out so they think they get a big win. So in my conversations with the folks who negotiated this, they're fully aware that that's a trick that would allow them to do that, but yet they've got it negotiated to the point that they can't do this. So excited about sending U.S. beef to China. Let's see it happening. And understand exactly will the Chinese stand up to their side of the deal that was made to make that happen. Sugar compromise was made. I know a lot of folks in the sugar side believe they were coming from a position of where they had been hurt by $4 billion and expected to not have to negotiate away much of what they were wanting to get done. That wasn't necessarily the case. you know, emotions are a little raw right now, and so I know some of our folks in the sugar world are upset with the deal. But as we understand what happened, getting the purity down from 99.5 to 99.2, that was a big win across most of what gets shipped in the United States. The incremental extra that Mexico gets right of first refusal on, having it stay at 95.5, we'll see what impact that has. Right now, it may be taking on more of an emotional impact to guys in Sugar World than it ultimately winds up to be. But let's hope that one's settled. The problem that our sugar guys had, of course, is that this came right on the front end of a NAFTA negotiation, which is broadly everything in NAFTA, which is going to be very difficult to get done. And I know the administration was driven to get the sugar piece out of the way so that as they begin to engage on NAFTA in a more broad, more broadly sense, that wouldn't be still out there. They could get that taken care of, and that's basically what they did.
So the last one we mentioned, Intelligence Committee, obviously have to talk Russia.
Well, we do, and I don't do a lot of talking on television and the media. I've been invited to be on every talk show, every Sunday morning show, every evening show to talk about this issue. I really can't do a thorough investigation by trying to conduct it in public, and so I've taken the position from the very start that I'm not going to do that. When I have accomplished something, I'll tell you. When I've got something to say, I'll say it. But in the meantime, I'm not going to talk about the details. Now, with that said, I want to assure your listeners, as I try to assure my fellow members in Congress, that we have an aggressive investigation going on. We've been reviewing thousands of documents. We've interviewing folks. We'll have Jay Johnson in next week to talk about his role and what he understood the Russians to be doing or not doing with respect to the electoral systems we had in place, voter registration, those kind of things. We'll have that open hearing with him next week to try to help him communicate to the world what he was seeing, and then kind of what reactions protections that he was encouraging states and local municipalities to actually have responsibility for the voting system in our country, how they reacted and how they responded to being protecting themselves. I saw an article in the paper yesterday today that Dallas had been thought that they were being attacked by the Russians, but that based on the safeguards they had in place, the protections they had in place as a result of what they had seen happening in other places, that they didn't believe that the Russians were able to get into their systems. And so the more of those stories we hear, the better, because that's one of the questions we're going to try to answer through the investigation is what impact did the Russians do or not do? What impact did it have? And so we hope to have Jay in front of us next week, I think on the 21st, to have that conversation. But just because you don't see me on Fox and Friends or Hannity or whoever it is, or CNN or MSNBC talking about this issue, does not mean we're not going after it in full speed. A lot of pressure to get this done quickly. There's no reason to delay. There are no reasons to delay whatsoever. We're trying to talk to a lot of witnesses. The witnesses and get lawyers involved. So then you've got a three-corner hat trying to get somebody to come in, because you got to time it when we can be there, time it when the witness can be there, time it when the witness's lawyer can be there. And so that makes for a complicated jigsaw puzzle of when you actually schedule folks to get them in for the interviews and that kind of thing. But we're working it hard. And my team and Adam Schiff, my partner in this deal, we're pushing on those this whole issue of getting these witnesses interviewed really hard, because the quicker we get it done, the quicker we get the answers, the quicker we get our response out, our report out, the better for everybody.
It's great to see you. Man, what a schedule. Wish you the best.
Well, thanks, big guy. I appreciate that. It's good to be with you, and I hope to be on again soon.
Again, it's the Honorable Mike Conaway, Chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, represents the 11th Congressional District of Texas. And this is the Agribusiness Report.